Thanks for tuning in to the Fairhaven Church Sermons Podcast. My name is Brandon Tates, and I'm the AVL Director here at Fairhaven, and we're so glad you've decided to join us. Fairhaven is a part of Harbor Churches, a multi-site church located in West Michigan, and we exist to help people find their way back to God. We hope this message helps you to take your next step in your faith journey. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Good morning, Fairhaven. My name is Jeremy, one of the pastors here, and it still feels like I should be on my way to a tailgate or something. Greg and I, when we had heard from a lot of you Michigan State fans that like you were going to go all out to make sure that you were going to put us in green and white this morning, to the point that like we spent a good chunk of time checking the internet for what we were going to wear. There's this pair of green and white striped overalls that would have been fire, but I'd actually gotten so like we had so kind of determined that like this is going to happen. We're going to end up in Michigan State gear. That when I found out Michigan won, if I'm honest, like I was a little bit disappointed. Which then I realized it actually helps me a little bit understand what it is to be a Michigan State fan, since your team disappoints you every weekend. Right? Just going to let that one hold for just a second. I'm not going to lie, I was really excited for that joke, but. Now the hard transition back to the Exodus. So we are jumping in this morning again to the book of Exodus. If you're newer with us, we dive into kind of some long form series where we take a book of the Bible and we just dive in. We want to dive into the text, explore what's going on below the surface, what's going on in the stories, and then to pull them out and ask how can we learn what it means to be better followers of Jesus because of it. And so we started a few weeks ago looking at the story of the Exodus. And really what we found is the book of Exodus starts in a lot of ways by setting the scene. And now for the next handful of weeks, we're going to be diving deep into the story of the life of a guy by the name of Moses. And what we often do is we dive really deep into a story, but today we're going to do something a little bit different. We'll get back to that again next week. But today what I want to do is instead of dive into the kind of nitty-gritty details, I want to zoom out and I want to look at Moses' life as a whole. Who is Moses? How was it that Moses ended up being exactly the right person at exactly the right time for God to send on this rescue mission for his people? So I want to step back and look at the overall view, the overall life of Moses. And in looking at the life of Moses, what I hope we find is kind of a paradigm, kind of a way of understanding our lives. That if we want to ask the question, what does it look like to move through life in a healthy way, right? Because we're all moving through life. What does it look like to do it in a way that's healthy? What does it look like to do it in a way that actually brings meaning and real lasting joy? And so we're going to start by looking at the life of Moses, and then we're going to step back and look at a way of even viewing our lives. And then next week, we're going to dive right back in. So we're going to be in Exodus chapter 2. We're going to pick up actually right where we left off last week. So in the story of Exodus, we have the Israelite people in Egypt. We see the Israelite people are growing, they're flourishing. The Pharaoh, if you remember, has that paranoid rant where he looks out and sees the people are growing. If there's a war that breaks out, and if they join our enemies, they might defeat us and then they might leave. And so the Pharaoh decides that the best option is to enslave an entire nation of people. So he does. And then he sees that they continue to grow. So then the Pharaoh puts out that order, says all baby boys have to be killed. We read the story of how Moses was saved. He was put in the basket, placed on the Nile. Pharaoh's daughter would find him and adopt him into her family. Moses, we would read, grows up in Pharaoh's household. And then last week, we looked at the story when Moses went out and saw one of his fellow Hebrew people being beaten by an Egyptian taskmaster. He kills him, and then Pharaoh finds out. And so we jump in right after that story. It says, when Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Now, a priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. So we have a bunch of women who are serving as shepherds for their dad's flocks. So then some other shepherds come along. We know from the story, these are going to be some male shepherds. They come along and they drove them away. But Moses got up and came to their rescue and watered their flock. When the girls returned to Reuel, their father, he asked them, "Why have you returned so early today?" Which tells you this is not the first time this has happened. This is how it happens. They answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds." And notice, how do they see Moses? Not as a Hebrew, not as an Israelite. This is a man at this point who, he looks like an Egyptian, he walks like an Egyptian, talks like an Egyptian, right? If I could sing, I would break into song, all right? So he rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock. "And where is he?" Reuel asked his daughters. "Why did you leave him? Invite him to have something to eat." Moses agreed to stay with the man who gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage, which is one of the weirdest exchanges ever, right? You watered my sheep, have my daughter? But Zipporah would give birth to a son. Moses would name him Gershom, saying, "I have become a foreigner in a foreign land." During that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. So we have this story of Moses fleeing from the Pharaoh, ending up in Midian. He has that exchange with the women at the well. Moses will end up tending father-in-law's sheep. And then it says a time will come when the Israelite people, when the Pharaoh dies, the cry of the Israelite people goes up to God. He hears them. And then we know the next story is God is going to show up to Moses and is going to give Moses a calling to go back and demand that Pharaoh set them free. God's going to show up in the burning bush. But if you're anything like me, I tend to approach the scriptures with a pretty healthy sense of curiosity, asking a bunch of questions. And so I wonder, how long was Moses in the desert? Right? I wonder how long Moses showed up and they mistook him for an Egyptian. How long did Moses spend in Pharaoh's family? Right? Anybody ever see Prince of Egypt, the Disney movie back in the day, right? Like kind of younger Moses shows up to Pharaoh. How long was Moses in Egypt? How long was Moses in the desert in Midian with this father-in-law? And the book of Exodus really isn't very concerned with letting us know. Do you notice the only length of time they tell us is it was a long period. Just he went out, he had to flee from the Pharaoh, he went to Midian, he was there for a long period, and then God would show up and would call him to go back to the Pharaoh. How long? Book of Exodus isn't concerned with telling us, but there's another place in the scriptures that actually gives us an insight. In order to get there, we actually have to leave the world of Exodus, and we have to fast forward almost 1,500 years to the book of Acts. So in between the Exodus, we're going to leave the Old Testament. Jesus will have been born. Jesus will grow. At the age of 30, he'll launch his 3-year ministry. Jesus will be killed, resurrected, ascended. The first followers of Jesus will go out into their world proclaiming the good news to anybody who would listen. One of those people we have a story of in the book of Acts. It's a guy by the name of Stephen. And we know of Stephen because Stephen is actually the first person we have in the scriptures who will actually lose his life because he chose to follow Jesus. See, Stephen would run into a guy, we'll know him later as Paul, But before Paul was Paul, Paul was Saul. And Paul would become one of the greatest church planters, one of the greatest missionaries, one of the greatest people proclaiming the good news of Jesus the church has ever seen. But before Paul was Paul, Paul was Saul. And Saul was just as passionate about stomping out the movement of Jesus. And the way Saul, the way he thought you stomp out the way of the movement of Jesus is by stomping out the followers of Jesus. And so Saul was there when Stephen is being executed. Stephen is going to be stoned for his belief in Jesus. Saul gives the okay. And Stephen, before he dies, Stephen actually, he proclaims this brilliant sermon. If you've never read it, you should go to Acts chapter 7, read Stephen's sermon. But in Stephen's sermon, he starts proclaiming what God has done in and through his people from the beginning. And Stephen will have a chunk where he'll talk about Moses. And so we'll read that here. It says, at that time, Moses was born, and he was no ordinary child. For 3 months, he was cared for by his family. When he was placed outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him and brought him up as her own son. Moses was educated in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was powerful in speech and action. When Moses was 40 years old, Stephen says, he decided to visit his own people, the Israelites. So according to Stephen, Moses is born. He's placed in the basket, placed in the Nile. Moses will be adopted into Pharaoh's daughter's family, and he will live there for the first 40 years of his life. It's at 40, Stephen says, Moses goes out to visit his people, and then we see what he saw. It says he saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian. So he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. The next day, Moses came upon two Israelites who were fighting. He tried to reconcile them by saying, "Men, you're brothers. Why do you want to hurt each other?" But the man who was mistreating the other pushed Moses aside and said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" When Moses heard this, he fled to Midian, where he settled as a foreigner and had two sons. After 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to Moses in the flames of a burning bush in the desert near Mount Sinai. The story we read from the book of Exodus just as a long period. How long does Stephen in Acts say that long period lasted? Another 40 years. So according to Stephen, Moses is 40 when he goes out and kills the Egyptian. According to Stephen, Moses is then 80 years old when he has that encounter with the burning bush. And then Stephen will finish out the story of Moses. He says, when he saw this, he was amazed at the sight. As he went over to get a closer look, he heard the Lord say, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Moses trembled with fear and did not dare to look. Then the Lord said to him, "Take off your sandals, for the place you are standing is holy ground. I have indeed seen the oppression of my people in Egypt. I have heard their groaning and have come down to set them free. Now come, I will send you back to Egypt." This is the same Moses they had rejected with the words, "Who made you ruler and judge?" He was sent to be their ruler and deliverer by God himself through the angel who appeared to him in the bush. He led them out of Egypt and performed wonders and signs in Egypt at the Red Sea and for how long? 40 years in the wilderness. So according to Stephen, Moses will die at 120 at the end of that 40 years in the desert. Moses' life is essentially these three 40-year segments. And I want to say just a brief word about the number 40, that in the scriptures, the way the biblical authors will use numbers is often the way we do today, where numbers can be quantity, but they can also be quality, right? Like if I say something cost $1 billion, it could mean a quantity of it could actually cost $1 billion, or it could be the quality, that thing cost a fortune, right? Anybody, when it's super hot in the summer, you walk outside and it's like, it's 1,000 degrees outside. It's not. And it says something about the quality of the temperature, right? So the number 40 in the biblical author's mind is one of those, it could mean actual 40 and it can mean a really good long time. But what Stephen does is he takes Moses' life and he breaks it down into three even sections. So if we were to timeline Moses, we have his life of 120 years broken down into those three 40-year sections. We know in that first one, that first 40 years, Moses spends in Egypt as an Egyptian. He's growing up in Pharaoh's daughter's household. That next 40 years, he's going to spend in the desert, wandering around, watching over the flock of his father-in-law. That last 40 years, Moses is going to spend delivering the people from Egypt. And now what's fascinating is even these 40 years, they all kind of start the same. Do you remember a couple weeks ago, we looked at Moses' kind of birth story and we talked about how names matter. When Moses was born, he's placed in that basket on the Nile. Pharaoh's daughter finds it and names him and she says this. She says, she named him Moses saying, "I drew him out of the water." That name Moses, in the Hebrew, it's Moshe. And Moshe means to be drawn out or to draw out. So in a lot of ways, that first 40 years starts as Moses being a baby boy in a time when the Pharaoh decided all baby boys need to die. So Moses is one of the oppressed people, and he is Moshe'd. He is drawn out of the water. That next 40 years, remember, it's the story we looked at this morning. Moses shows up to a well. He sees what? A bunch of female shepherds being oppressed, pushed aside by all of these other shepherds. And what does Moses do? He stands up for the people that are being oppressed. And how does he do it? By drawing out water for their flocks. That last 40 years will essentially start with Moses going to the Pharaoh and standing up for an entire group of oppressed people, the Israelites, the Hebrew people. And then that will start by him essentially drawing out the people and then leading them through the desert. Each one is standing up for an oppressed people and drawing out. And then what I find fascinating about Moses' life is when you step back and look at it in its totality, Moses was exactly the right guy at the right time for God to send to the Pharaoh. Because if God needed to send somebody to the Pharaoh, to the ruler of Egypt, who better than somebody who knew Egypt? Who better than somebody that grew up in the very family of the Pharaoh to both get an audience with the Pharaoh and be able to demand that the Pharaoh do something different than what he's doing? Moses is exactly the right guy because he knows Egypt. He likely knows, he probably grew up with the Pharaoh. And Moses is exactly the right guy. And then if God knows, he's not going to send the people from Egypt straight into the promised land, but there's going to be a 40-year wandering of the desert. Who better to lead the people through the desert than the guy who had literally spent 40 years leading and guiding and protecting a group of sheep in the very same desert? That Moses knows Egypt and he also knows the desert. So in this section of his life, he's the right guy to go back to Egypt to then lead the people through the very place he came to know. But then what I find interesting is let's pretend we met Moses somewhere around here. Let's pretend we built that time machine. We went back. We meet Moses when he's right kind of in the middle of the desert. So he's 60 years old. He's been wandering around the desert, overseeing these sheep for 20 years at this point. If we were to meet up with Moses and be like, "Dude, Moses, like what you're doing right now is going to prepare you for the greatest thing God could do for his people." I have to wonder, how does Moses respond? Because to Moses, that middle chunk of his life had to have almost felt like a dead end. Had to have almost felt like it's over, right? Because in Egypt, Moses had everything. He was royalty. He's in the Pharaoh's house. He's got wealth. He's got royalty. He's got influence. He's got everything. And then in a moment, Moses finds himself in the desert where now he will spend day after day, after month, after year, after decade, overseeing a bunch of sheep that aren't even his. They belong to his father-in-law. Remember when Moses even names his kid, right? He names him Gershom, saying, I was a foreigner in a foreign land. But there's something about this period that even though Moses likely could never have seen it when he was there, that God was uniquely using to shape and to form Moses to be the person that God would call to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. Moses, life in essentially three stages, a section of having everything, losing everything, and then realizing in that last 40 years, the bigger thing that God was calling him to do. And it's here where I think it's helpful to step back again. Like I said, we're gonna look at the life of Moses, then we're gonna step back and look at kind of a movement in the life of Moses that my hope is helpful for us as we think about what does it look like for you and I, for me, for us, to live our lives in a healthy way. And in order to jump into kind of that movement, I'm gonna borrow some from a book. It's a book by the name of David Brooks. It's called The Second Mountain. So if you've not read it, I recommend the resource, but I'll kind of give you a little book report for a few minutes, right? So David Brooks essentially argues that in life, like we saw in Moses, there are often three stages, three kind of phases of life. He would call them two mountains with a valley, okay? So there's a first mountain, a valley, and then a later second bigger mountain. And Brooks will argue that every single one of us in life, we start on this first mountain. That this is the mountain we start on as kids. This is the mountain we're largely probably on that first mountain through kind of up until we get to about middle ages. So sometime in middle ages, I think actually starts earlier than what we often think it might. It's probably somewhere in kind of that 30s, 40s. But the first mountain, what this is it's all about trying to achieve self. The first mountain's all about me. The first mountain is where success really matters, where we're trying to gain all of these things that we think are gonna make us happy. We try to gain success and wealth and influence and all of these things. And in the first mountain stage of life, successes and failures are really important because they help us figure out who we are. They help us figure out what we're passionate about, what we want to give ourselves to, what kind of people we become. And so in a lot of ways, the first mountain is all about kind of, if you think of your life as kind of a bucket, the first mountain is all about trying to fill up your bucket, who am I? What does it mean to chase after the things that I think are going to make me happy? This is the first mountain. Brooks will argue that most of us, probably all of us, at some point or another in our life, we end up getting blown off the first mountain into the valley. And he'll argue there are likely two things that are going to blow you off the first mountain. The first one is failure. That the first thing that blows you off the first mountain is the fact that you try, if we go back to the, you're trying to gain influence, power. You have this idea of what the perfect life looks like and you're running the company or you're moving up the corporate ladder. You've got that perfect guy or girl and in your head, you know what that looks like and you're living in the house that you've dreamt of. And for some of us, we get blown off that first mountain because it didn't happen. Right, you've been in the same job for 20 years. You thought you would have been but it just feels like you're just spinning your wheels. And the relationship, either maybe you haven't found him or her, or you have, and it's not what you thought it was gonna be. And so you find yourself in this spot where you thought this is what you were gonna give your life to. And because of failure, because it didn't happen, you end up thrown off into the valley. The first thing that can throw you off is failure. The second thing is success. Now, this one might feel a little odd at first, but the second thing that can throw us off that first mountain is that you actually got it, right? You actually got it. You end up in the position on top of the company. You have the you have everything you thought you wanted, everything you thought would give your life meaning. You got it. And then what you realize is that you're still not happy. You realize you're still not content. You realize that you got what you thought would be everything, and now you realize all of those promises were simply just empty promises. They failed to deliver what they promised, and that success throws you into the valley. It feels like a good day to put this guy up on the screen. Right? Go Blue. Tom Brady. Greatest quarterback to have ever lived, probably. Tom Brady has this fascinating interview. It's a handful of years old now, but he's already one of the greatest quarterbacks at the time of the interview. He's won 3 Super Bowls, and then he sits down with somebody from 60 Minutes, and he starts talking about his life. And in the interview, Tom Brady says this. He says, "There's times when I'm not the person that I want to be. Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me?" I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, "Hey man, this is what it is. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me? I think, God, it's gotta be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. I mean, I've done it. I'm 27. What else is there for me?" You have a guy who got it. He's got success. He's got accolades. He's got influence. He's got everything. And you read of a guy who made it to the top of the first mountain only to realize the promises were empty, and he finds himself in the valley. There's a contemplative, a guy by the name of Thomas Merton. I love his quote. He says this. He says, "People may spend their whole lives climbing the ladder of success only to find once they reach the top that the ladder is leaning against the wrong wall." This is what I want to give my life to, what's going to give me meaning. And then you get to the top and you realize this isn't where I wanted to be. Brooks argues that we all start on that first, the first mountain is about proclaiming and building self. It's about filling my bucket. It's about influence. It's about power. It's about all the things. That we all end up in the valley. And the reality is, we don't like the valley, right? The valley's hard. But the valley, if we're honest, is where the most transformation happens. The valley, if we engage it right, if we actually engage it, is the place where we're able to step back and ask the bigger questions of, okay, what is the meaning of my life? What will bring joy or satisfaction or meaning to my life? Because I've tried this and it's failed. And too often today, we end up getting stuck on this first mountain because we get thrown into the valley, we don't like it, and so then we just put something else on top of the mountain, we just keep trying to do this over and over again. But if we engage the valley, this is where transformation happens. We had Moses in Egypt, had everything. Moses, in the blink of an eye, ends up in the valley. To the biblical authors, often that valley is represented by the desert in the scriptures. This is a place where he lost everything and he found something greater. David Brooks says something about the importance of the valley. He says this. He says, "The reason transformation happens in the valley is because something that had hitherto," and how great of a word is hitherto, right? We got to bring that back. "Something that had hitherto been useful and pleasant needs to die. That thing," he says, "is the ego." That if the first mountain is all about building self, what happens in the valley is we can learn how to die to self, and as we're dying to self is when really kind of that second mountain comes into view. That if the first mountain is about acquisition, about building me and my, the second mountain is then about contribution, about asking, okay, God, in the gifts that you've given me, the skills you've given me, the resources that I now have access to because of the first mountain, what does it look like for me now to die to myself and to have my eyes open for the ways I can then be good news, I can bless, I can then give myself for those around me. If the first mountain's about creating self, the second mountain's about how can I use what I have and who I am and what I've done for the good of the world around me. Ronald Rollheiser, he's brilliant. He says this. He says, the struggle of the second mountain is not to get our lives together, but to give our lives away. The goal, if we go back to the next graph, the goal, if we want to move through life in a healthy way, is this. Again, this is important in our youth. Right? Success is really important, especially when we're trying to make ourselves. But at some point, we need to engage the valley in order for that second mountain to come into view, where we literally die to ourselves and our eyes become open to something bigger. And this, why talk about this today? Why does this matter? Well, I think in a lot of ways, I think our culture has been sold a lie that this is the most important thing. Right? We're told, how many of our songs, how many of our advertisements all talk about how like the glory days are back then, right? Whenever then, fill in the blank. But the glory days were back then. The health industry has $1 billion trying to sell you that this is the point, right? That so often we find ourselves blown off and we end up just circling here when there's something bigger possible. Let me give you a couple examples. Let's talk about relationships. Let's talk about relationships. Let's talk about marriage. Often it feels like the first mountain is often, Brooks would say, is kind of the honeymoon. This is the feelings. It's often like what this means to me and how it makes me feel and all of me. And then so much, anybody knows that at some point the butterflies, the honeymoon season ends. And then so much advice is all given around how do we recreate the honeymoon season, right? Which is essentially how do we recreate the first mountain? Instead of asking the question, what does it look like for us to die to self and embody this selfless Christ-like love for one another? That what happens is the second mountain actually has a way of setting us free to be able to love one another for who they are, not for what we can get from them, right? To love God, not again because of what we hope God might get for us, but simply because God is the well that we've come to time and again that we've found is constant and steady. That we on the second mountain is where we actually learn to love ourselves and realize the things that we maybe once thought were flaws maybe aren't, and we're actually able to love God, to love ourselves, to love one another well. It's the space where we give ourselves away. Last example is this coming Tuesday. I was realizing as I was writing the sermon, I've been able to coach my son in football for the last few years. My boy's the giant, number 84. But I've been able to coach him for the last few years, and I realized as I was prepping for this morning that this Tuesday is the last football game I will ever coach my boy in, because he'll graduate eighth grade, and it's our last football game Tuesday. Next year he'll be in ninth grade. They've got whole coaching staffs. So if you look for me on Tuesday night, I'm going to be somewhere sobbing, right? But for the last few years, I've had the ability to coach my son. And one of the things I so love about being able to do this is it's given me an opportunity to take the things that I've known, the knowledge I've accumulated, the skills that I've gained back when I thought I was going to be a big shot football player, right? It didn't even come close to working out for me. But what it's given me an opportunity to do is to pour myself out into a group of young boys every single day, every week, to be able to share with them what I've come to know. It's our very first practice. We made sure to let our team know that like we want to give ourselves to making you the best football players we can. But we also recognize that there's so much more, that our hope is what we're going to teach you is going to make you better football players. But even more than that is going to make you better people. It's going to make you better men on the backside, because there's something bigger there. And so what I want to do is I want to invite you, if David Brooks is right, that we have this first mountain and it's in the valley that we find the most transformation that leads us into that second mountain, what we're going to do starting next week is we're going to dive into this. Moses is going to spend time in his desert, in his valley. Moses is going to show us some things that are really important, maybe even more than that, that are critical to what it looks like to live this chunk, that valley, that desert, well, in order to come out of the backside living a healthier life. Next week, we're going to start that journey of looking at what is that critical piece? What is that thing? But for now, I'm going to invite you that you pray with me. God, for the story of Moses, God, we are grateful. For the way we can see in the story of Moses, a calling on our own lives that you have on each and every one of us to continue to chase after you, to continue to lean into the things that will make us more and more like your son. And so, God, we pray that you would open our eyes to all of the ways that we are still striving after the first mountain, and that you might help us to, Jesus, do what you called us to do, to continue to die to self, to open up to one another. God, we pray that we would give our lives to living into what you said is the greatest, to love you and to love one another as ourselves. We pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks for listening. As you are tuning in, our hope is that you were encouraged and inspired to take the next step in your faith journey. For service times and for more information about how you can become a part of Fairhaven, you can visit us at fhchurch.org. Have a great week.